The Gary Knoll Show, weekdays at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
In just a few moments, we're going to be speaking with Christopher Enders. He is the Senior Legislative Counsel for the American Civil Liberties Union out of Washington, D.C., and he is one of the leading representatives lobbying Congress on issues such as conflicts between civil and religious rights, housing, hate crimes, and lesbian and gay rights. We're going to ask him about the Defense Authorization Bill, Sections 1031 and 1032 in the Senate, and the transformation of the U.S. into a battlefield, and what that actually means. And these are issues that we must address. We must get to the bottom of a lot of this. There's confusion out there. I don't want anyone to be confused about anything. I want us to be able to give you the facts. I'm running, with a little bit of a technical difficulty today since I'm out of office and I do not have internet access. I'm going to ask my engineer just to keep me informed when our guests are up. Let's go over now and say hello to Christopher Enders. Nice to have you with us today, Mr. Enders.
Hi, good afternoon.
There's a lot of confusion about what this legislation that they're proposing in the Senate that was passed in the House could actually mean to us. And some people believe that we have enough laws to protect America, and we do not need to American citizens feel that if they protest or if they join an organization, if they're using their freedom of speech, that could be in any way be held against them, especially since we already have proof that the FBI and other intelligence agencies have targeted nonviolent, peaceful individuals and organizations because they were deemed a threat. Now they want to give the President of the United States the sole power and future presidents to determine who they believe represents a threat. And when the average American soul, well, this only deals with terrorists like Al-Qaeda or the Taliban or someone that would want to blow up a building or hurt Americans, then they say, okay, I'm willing then to give you that power. But then others will say, but it goes beyond that. And historically, when you've given this unbridled power to Congress or to the President, look at what they've done with it. So could you take us through step by step what the legislation allows or would not allow and why we should be concerned about it or not concerned about it?
Yes. Well, that's a good introduction. I think that the problem with the bill, this is a bill, it's called the National Defense Authorization Act. It's a bill that passes every year, usually at the end of the year, and the president typically signs it, and it changes the rules each year for what the Defense Department can do and can't do. One of the things that was done this year in the Senate Armed Services Committee was the Senate Armed Services Committee passed out a bill and gave as kind of a free ride on that bill these detention provisions. And so it allows and in some cases requires indefinite detention by the military of people without charge or trial. And the focus that we've had has been very much on what's called Section 1031 of the bill. And basically what that does is it's a very broad authorization for the president, this president, a future president, to use the military to imprison people without charge or trial. Now, it does require that they have a tie to a terrorist organization, that they provide support, for example, to a terrorist organization. But support is actually a very broad term, for one thing. So it can mean not that you're taking part in an attack, but providing money, sending a check off, right, can count as support. But the other part is that this is not a criminal statute. This doesn't mean that anyone's violated a criminal law. It doesn't mean anyone's committed a crime, and no one's being charged with a crime under this. So this is basically accusations that somebody has done this, And as we all know, the government very often is right, but very often is wrong, too. And people get wrongly accused, people get misidentified, and those people have an opportunity in court to prove their innocence, and the government's required to prove their guilt. And that's the way the American system has always worked. But what happens under this is there's no requirement of proof of guilt. There's no chance for anybody to prove their innocence. This is all based on the government saying that they believe that this person has done this or that thing, and that therefore they should be in indefinite military detention without charge or trial, potentially for the rest of their lives. And that provision can even apply to United States citizens, and it can even apply within the United States itself. So this is an amazingly broad provision, and it basically is being jammed through. There was a Senate vote yesterday that there were 38 senators who voted to take these provisions out. There were 60 senators who voted to keep them in. And the next stop is by the end of this week, it's going to be in a conference between the House and the Senate, and then they will be sent to the president within the next couple weeks. And the good news in this is right now is that the White House and the administration have weighed in very heavily that they too are concerned about these provisions, in some ways for reasons that overlap with ours, in some ways for reasons that are a little different. But not only has the White House threatened a veto, but they've put out as in opposition to these provisions, the Secretary of Defense, the FBI Director, the CIA Director, the head of the National Security Division at the Justice Department, the President's top counterterrorism advisor, the General Counsel of the Defense Department, basically the entire array of top national security officials are coming in saying this is bad policy, it's bad foreign policy, it's bad counterterrorism policy, and there's no reason for people to feel endangered in this way when in their view what they're doing now works. So, you know, we can argue back and forth probably with them about whether we agree with everything that is being done right now, and certainly the ACLU and lots of others have concerns with what's being done right now. But I think we're all in agreement that there's no reason to at this point either tie down the president's hands by forcing everyone into the military system or expanding the use of the military in way and especially against, you know, United States citizens and other people here in the United States itself.
Okay, I appreciate you giving us that overview. Is it true or not that Senator McCain says Americans can be sent to Guantanamo? And did he not say that yesterday in an exchange with Mark Udell, who introduced an amendment to modify this section, and his amendment was voted down on Tuesday, including a lot of Democrats? And then Senator Rand Paul has introduced an amendment to delete the section entirely. And on Tuesday, he had the following exchange with Senator McCain, who is co-sponsoring the bill. Quote, Senator Paul, my question would be under the provisions where would it be possible that an American citizen then could be declared an enemy combatant sent to Guantanamo Bay and detained indefinitely? McCain, quote, I think that as long as that individual, no matter who they are, if they pose a threat to the security of the United States of America, should not be allowed to continue that threat. So that to me says a great deal. Here's my...
It was an amazing exchange that Senator McCain did not deny that. And there were other statements made by Senator Lindsey Graham, who's another top Republican negotiator on this issue, who has said over and over again that the battlefield is America, and that anyone picked up here suspected of being involved in terrorism, whether a citizen or not a citizen, should be sent into the military system. And yesterday he said, and they're not entitled to any lawyer. So
right.
You get locked
fair,
up without
enough.
Charges
He's from
without
South
a lawyer.
Carolina, so why should you at all be surprised? I'm from the South, sir. I know the politics of America, and I'm in contempt of the entire system. I don't believe that we should, for one moment, trust the motives of these individuals. I simply look at who gives them money, which meetings of ALEC have they attended, which lobbyists have been in their office, how much of these lobbyists give, and then let's see how they vote. And without without exception. You can follow the laws written not by members of Congress, but by these special interest groups. You can see how they're implemented. You can see the sweet talk around the issues to the public, like the Medicare Supplement Act that was written by Big Pharma that gave it an extra $200 billion a year. And yet we were told this is all for our good. So when someone tells me that being in Iraq, Afghanistan, invading Iran, being there as all these presidential wannabes, they would absolutely go in there and defend Israel and our right of first strike, as Mitt Romney said, and I'm thinking, you're not speaking for me. You may be speaking for a large number of Americans, but for those of us who are against these provisions, you don't speak for me. So I don't see that these legislators, including and specifically Lindsey Graham or John McCain, who I consider a contemptible human being on every level, I do not see that they represent the best interests of the United States. But I do think that they're doing a very good job for those people who are really paying their bills. Your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think that it is a real concern that people would think that this is, that anyone would think, you know, 10 years after 9/11, with the United States pulling out of Iraq, trying to pull out forces, a lot of the forces from Afghanistan, Osama bin Laden dead, that anyone would think that now is the time to up the role of the military and bring the military, use military power within the United States itself and against American citizens. It is a crazy proposition. One of the people who was, you know, it is, you know, although I think this issue has been kind of lopsided a little bit on, in terms of, you know, party and who's doing what on it. One of the real leaders in opposing this yesterday on the Senate floor was Senator Rand Paul, a Tea Party Republican from Kentucky, who gave a very strong, compelling argument about the dangers that these detention provisions present to all Americans. And it was a very strong presentation. And Senator Mark Kirk from Illinois, another Republican, voted against these provisions as well. So it's, you know, now that's only two members of the 47 Republicans. But it does show that there is an opening there. And I, on the House side, actually, and this eventually will become an issue that the House is going to have to vote on too, if the bill comes out of the conference committee with this kind of language in it, there will be an opportunity for the House and the Senate to vote again on this issue. And
I just believe we should vote anyone out of office who votes for this. I think it's that simple. I'm tired of people telling us that they have the determination to see who is a threat to the United States. Now, did we not have the FBI's Operation COINTELPRO? Did that exist or not? Yes or no?
Yes.
Was any human being held accountable for that, for the illegal crimes, including trying to get Martin Luther King to commit suicide by secretly taping his conversations with his mistress and then going to give them to his wife if he did not commit suicide? Was anybody held accountable for any crime? Operation COINTELPRO, MK Ultra, the crimes the Church Committee found that were committed under the CIA, by the CIA, including the head of the CIA at that time. Was anyone ever held accountable for anything that they've done against the American people in the name of freedom and in the name of our security?
Yeah, and I think this is, you know, part of the concern we have here. A big part of the concern here is that you know, giving new powers over to the government without oversight, without having a check on those powers, is a dangerous thing.
I don't want to give them the powers under any case, because sooner or later those powers will be corrupt. And my final thought here is this. You are aware, I am sure, that the FBI has acknowledged that it has photographed and logged virtually all of the peaceful demonstrations that the environmentalists have been doing in the United States, including our movement, which was against genetic engineering from Prospect Park to Washington, D.C. You could see the vans. You could see the people in the vans. They weren't even hiding that they were filming. What right does the FBI, the federal government, have to take peaceful demonstrators bringing their grievance about something to the federal government, and then they are now put on a terrorist watch list? Because when it was asked, once you're in that system, can you then be put on a terrorist watch list? Now, you could be you could be against genetic engineering and end up on a terrorist watch list as it stands now. And now the President of the United States could determine that that means that you represent a threat to whom? The United States? No. To some corporation like Monsanto? Yes. Does the President of the United States select the head of Monsanto's top division to run the USDA? Yes. And at the FDA, Michael Taylor? Yes. Then whatever's bad for corporate America then becomes an issue of national security. I'm just showing you what is entirely possible and what has been happening and why I'm concerned that this legislation should not be done at all. It should be defeated. Your final thoughts, please.
Yeah, I think that kind of scenario seems very unlikely, but I also think that that this power is a broad power, and it's something that ought to concern everyone.
I appreciate
this is something where your members of Congress really are interested in hearing from you, because for a lot of members of Congress, this is the first time that they've looked at this legislation. It's been this week, and a lot of them are still making up their minds. So this is a good time to call your member of Congress.
I agree. Are you aware that no member of Congress acknowledged that they could have read the 1,300-page health Medicare bill because it was only given to them that morning and had been written by the lobbying groups representing Big Pharma, the for-profit hospital associations, and the insurance industries? And two things stuck out. A, that members of Congress were not writing laws. B, they hadn't even read the laws that they passed. And C, it was all to the benefit of the special interest groups. But no one found that a problem. I find it a big problem. So I'm concerned about people saying we need a defense authorization bill when what we need is a substantially smaller defense. And when was the last time any of these legislators on the left or right actually asked this question and the power to do so? This year, the United States military-industrial spy complex will spend approximately $1.3 trillion on and off books. And yet, under testimony of Senator Byrd from West Virginia, Donald Rumsfeld, the time Secretary of Defense, could not account for $2.7 trillion of money. Went missing, no accountability. To this date, it has not only not been accounted for, but now it's up to close to $10 trillion. So if you and I could not account for a massive amount of money, we would be held accountable. They are not held accountable. Also, when you ask how much money do we actually need to defend the United States, properly defend ourselves, it's about $200 billion based upon all the research I've been able to do with scholars in the field and those who are in oversight over military projects. But we're feeding a massive, massive for-profit insider machine in these different contracts. In one case, 10 separate companies doing the same identical work on the same system, but each one being fed by different legislators in the go write a check to this company. This is one of my donor's people. And I'm thinking it's time that we just stop and look carefully at everything. So when on one hand people are saying, well, let's not do too much on this defense authorization bill, I'm saying let's do everything we can to hold the defense industrial complex accountable like the rest of us for doing what they're supposed to, defending us, and not just feeding gigantic insider corporations like Halliburton or others. And those are my final thoughts. And I thank you and the ACLU for what you're doing to fight
on
behalf
of us. Can I just make one quick observation about something you raised earlier, I guess, with the health care bill? And it's something that we've been really concerned about with this issue, is that this bill was reported at, there was never a hearing on these detention provisions, and it was marked up in a secret committee markup there behind closed doors. Most of the senators who voted on it saw it for these provisions for no more than an hour or two and were told this is the best they could do. They could show it to one staffer, and that was it. And this is what happens when you legislate behind closed doors and without letting any sunshine in. As soon as the sunshine comes in, people then can actually see what the problems are and can start flagging them. But at this point, you're behind the eight ball and have a lot of makeup work to do. And I think that it is a mistake about it with not giving members of Congress enough time to look at legislation and deciding that you're going to do your legislating behind closed doors and not let the people see what you're doing.
Was it not also the case that the FISA was showing that major telecommunications companies were illegally spying upon U.S. citizens, and not just terror suspects, but broad-based across the board? And was it not Barack Obama, who was one of the people who initially, as a constitutional scholar and a professor at the University of Chicago on this very issue, said that this is wrong, but then went ahead once they supported the Democratic Party and were the largest single contributors to the Democratic campaign or to the Democratic conference, and suddenly it went from this is bad to this is good, and now that we made a crime no longer a crime, and under George Bush and these people, well, when was it okay to be spying illegally upon all Americans, selecting information that they chose with no guidelines, no oversight, and no awareness in the American public that this was happening to innocent citizens? This is the kind of abuse that is going on. That's a matter of record. That isn't speculation.
That's right. The changes in the surveillance program and the policies, and then actually ratifying that in U.S. law to give people protection who are violating the law is, I think, really one of the more distressing chapters in recent U.S. history.
Well, let us keep diligent, and thank you all for doing your due diligence down there. We look forward to following up, and please, everyone, my suggestion is contact your senator today and say, vote no to indefinite military detention. And if they say, well, why? Say, well, hold on a second. We had over 487 people at Guantanamo. How many of them were proven by any evidence to be terrorists or enemies of the United States? 91% were released after years because there was no evidence. But was it not also true that one of the reasons they got to be in that position is because the warlords in Afghanistan were given a bounty, upwards of $5,000 per head, and therefore were randomly picking up people, turning them over by the dozens, and they were being processed as potential terrorists where there was no evidence, and therefore demeaning the real effort to get at the real terrorists versus allowing innocent people to rot in prison and then saying we can't bring these dangerous people to the United States and hold them in the same courts of law and give them the opportunity to defend themselves, and we bring the challenge of what we have against them. So indefinite detention, no legal representation, then you write the rules to make sure that they can't even see the evidence you have against them. And then they were tortured, and now that torture is considered acceptable, and the very same rendition that was done is now not punishable, and by the Geneva Conventions and by every international statute, waterboarding is torture. So we have admitted tortures, and each and every one of those admitted tortures, from George Bush to Dick Cheney, have been allowed a get-out-of-jail pass free. I believe that that is reprehensible and mocking the rule of law. If we have a rule of law, we shouldn't have two rules of law, one for the powerful and one for everyone else. And that's what we have right now. So we're going to keep on this. Tell your senator, no, we don't need any more military detention. You screwed everything up at Guantanamo. You allowed multiple innocent people to rot. And you were afraid to bring those who are guilty into America. Since when are we incapable of finding those who are guilty based upon the evidence guilty? And all the terrorists who have been caught and brought to justice in the United States have gone to jail. So we can do that. But my God, this becomes so ridiculous. And I say stop this defense authorization bill and examine the defense military-industrial complex. Thank you very much, Christopher.
Great. Thank you.
Now, just one aside from this, when people, I'm on the road, but my office sent me this. This is from Pat Mackey from the East Village, Police State and Liar Loans. And I'll go to this point that I consider very important. When you speak about the U.S. becoming a police state, can you please qualify that? Yes, I can. I'll say this. The U.S. has been in a police state now for at least 25 years. Partly you didn't know about it because they were doing a lot of their surveillance, wiretapping, collecting of information, profiling outside of public view. The media was not aware of it, but those who were looking could find the evidence, and many books were written about it, broadcast done on it. Then you have another issue. But they have been profiling, and we have been a police state for African, Asian, Latino, and Native Americans for the last 400 years. Indeed, this country began as a police state. You know the saying, first they came from my neighbor, I said nothing, then they came for me? Most Anglo-Americans said nothing as private prisons, stop-and-frisk searches, pepper spray were used against their black, brown, and tan neighbors. All the forces of oppression were neatly in place with the enthusiastic support of the majority of white Americans who chose to believe that these forces were not intended for them. And when you said last week that we need somebody to represent the average person, you must have meant some average white person. Indeed, I find that offensive. And if you listen to my show, you should be ashamed of yourself for assuming that. I believe that we need someone to look after all people, inclusive of all races, religions, everyone, not just white people. That is a reprehensible racist statement you just made, and shame on you for doing it. But that's your right to do it, and this is a station that coddles and quantifies that. And because there are plenty of people speaking up, we are fully aware of Cornel West and Angela Davis, who I've interviewed. Perhaps Americans don't believe that black and brown leaders could represent the average person. Well, we've had black and brown leaders in different areas, and they have done a noble job of representing. And we've had black and brown leaders who have done just the opposite. And I will show you one right now who is the most powerful, and let's see what he has done to stop the military-industrial complex, the prison system, the war machine, and then ask that same question. So, yes, good people of this country were outraged when a 10-year-old child got arrested and a wheelchair-bound person flipped on his face, but not when that has happened to a black child or a Mexican vet. No, good people complain when 5-year-old black girl was handcuffed and arrested in her kindergarten class for having a childhood tantrum. No, good people went to the homes of the police officers who shot Sean Bell to denounce their deadly actions. And I doubt that anyone would have done that, even in your West Virginia hometown. Pat, you don't know what the people in my hometown would tolerate or not. That is a projection. But I have mentioned many times on this program, repeatedly, that we only considered it an important rape or a molestation when it was a white, educated, blonde woman around Central Park. I did my own research and found that over 34 Latino and African-American women had been assaulted during the same period of time with no coverage at all. Once again, we do not have justice for all, nor are we a nation of 99% with the angels, truth, and spiritual values on our side. We are as deeply flawed, as biased, as prejudiced, as selfish, as conceited, and as indifferent as we could possibly be. But that does not mean we are all that way, and it doesn't mean that we shouldn't continue to talk about it and expose it for what it is. Now, for those of you who are not fully aware that 9/11 allowed an enormous machine to go into operation, the private warmongers, and those, the warmongers who make enormous amounts of money, they really don't care who the conflict is with because they benefit from it. There is currently a new effort, a matrix of individual university-based strategic studies. It's called the Grand Strategy Program. It's cropped up on some of the best campuses in the United States. Duke University, Yale University, University of Texas at Austin, Columbia University, Temple University, University of Wisconsin-Madison. This is where you have a new type of academic warrior, the post-11 warrior, and they're engaged in what's called the Long War University. And according to Steve Horn and Alan Ruff and Truth Out, quote, they ostensibly created to train an up-and-coming elite to see a global big picture. This grand strategy network has brought together scores of foreign policy wonks, heavily invested literally and figuratively in an unending quest to maintain U.S. global supremacy, a campaign which they increasingly refer to as the Long War. Well, who pays for this? The network of grand strategy programs integral to the Long War University came about through the financial backing of Roger Hertog, the multimillionaire financial manager, man of the right, and a key patron of the contemporary conservative movement. Hertog is a chairman emeritus of the conservative social policy tank, the Manhattan Institute, and a board member of the right-wing American Enterprise Institute and the Club for Growth. Hertog additionally served on the executive committee of the influential neoconservative and pro-Israel Washington Institute for Near East Policy and has been a major financial contributor to Taglit Birthright Israel, Respected in various circles as a patron of the arts and culture, of libraries and archives, Hertog was awarded the National Humanities Medal by then George Bush, 2007. Well, more recently, Hertog introduced Wisconsin's Governor Scott Walker at a Manhattan Institute conference on the new social contract, reforming the terms of public employment in America. And the Grand Strategy Network originally started at Yale University, alumni alma mater for a long line of U.S. strategic planners and intelligence operatives. And this is where they start the war mechanism. You think this is something that everybody knows about? Anyone covering it? How we're planning on keeping a constant war effort going, no matter what, everywhere in the world? Listen to a former four-star general, the Supreme Commander of NATO. Listen to what he has to say.
What happened in 9/11 is we didn't have a strategy, we didn't have bipartisan agreement, we didn't have American understanding of it, and we had instead a policy coup in this country. A coup. A policy coup. Some hard-nosed people took over the direction of American policy, and they never bothered to inform the rest of us. I went through the Pentagon 10 days after 9/11. I couldn't stay away from Mother Army. I went back there to see Don Rumsfeld. I'd worked for him as a White House fellow in the 1970s. All this is in the book. And I said, am I doing okay on CNN? He said, yeah, fine. He said, I'm thinking about it. He says, I read your book. And he said, this is a book that talks about the Kosovo campaign. And he said, I just want to tell you, he said, nobody's going to tell us where or when we can bomb. Nobody. He said, I'm thinking of calling this a floating coalition. What do you think about that? I said, well, sir, thanks for reading my book. And, he said, thanks. That's all the time I've got. Really? And I went downstairs. I was leaving the Pentagon, and an officer from the Joint Staff called me into his office and said, I want you to know, he said, sir, we're going to attack Iraq. And I said, why? He said, we don't know. He said, I said, well, did they tie Saddam to 9/11? He said, no. He said, but I guess it's they don't know what to do about terrorism. And so they think, but they can attack states, and they want to look strong. And so I guess they think if they take down a state, it will intimidate the terrorists. And, you know, it's like that old saying, he said, if the only tool you have is a hammer, then every problem has to be a nail. Well, I walked out of there pretty upset. And then we attacked Afghanistan. I was pretty happy about that. We should have. And then I came back to the Pentagon about 6 weeks later. I saw the same officer. I said, why haven't we attacked Iraq? We still going to attack Iraq? He said, oh, sir. He says, it's worse than that. He said, he pulled up a piece of paper off his desk. He said, I just got this memo from the Secretary of Defense's office. It says we're going to attack and destroy the governments in seven countries in 5 years. We're going to start with Iraq, and then we're going to move to Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. I said, seven countries in 5 years. I said, is that a classified memo? He said, yes, sir. I said, well, don't show it to me. He was about to show it to me. He said, because I want to talk about it. And I sat on this information for a long time, for about 6 or 8 months. I was so stunned by this, I couldn't begin to talk about it. And I couldn't believe it would really be true, but that's actually what happened. These people took control of the policy in the United States. And I realized then, it came back to me, a 1991 meeting I had with Paul Wolfowitz. You know, in 2001 he was Deputy Secretary of Defense, but in 1991 he was the Under Secretary of Defense for Policy. It's the number three position in the Pentagon. And I had gone to see him when I was a one-star general. I was commanding the National Training Center. I had met him one time. He said, if you ever get to Washington, come look me up. They always say that. Well, I was there in Washington. It was a Friday afternoon. I'd visited Colin Powell. He'd given me 5 minutes of his precious time and sent me on my way. And I was bored in the Pentagon. And I thought, I'll just go, who can I see? I think I'll see Wolfowitz. So I called and up there. He was available. Scooter Libby came to the door. I met Scooter for the first time. And he brought me in. And I said to Paul, I said, and this is 1991, I said, Mr. Secretary, you must be pretty happy with the performance of the troops in Desert Storm. And he said, well, yeah, he said, but not really, he said, because the truth is we should have gotten rid of Saddam Hussein, and we didn't. And this was just after the Shia uprising in March of 91, which we had provoked, and then we kept our troops on the sidelines and didn't intervene. And he said, but one thing we did learn, he said, we learned that we can use our military in the region, in the Middle East, and the Soviets won't stop us. He said, and we've got about 5 or 10 years to clean up those old Soviet client regimes, Syria, Iran, Iraq, before the next great superpower comes on to challenge us. And it was like, you know, I'm coming out of the Mojave Desert. I've been training troops. I haven't been thinking geostrategy for some time. And suddenly, a guy just sort of shoves this nugget at you. Well, you remember it. It was a pretty stunning thing. You mean the purpose of the military is to start wars and change governments? It's not to sort of deter conflict? We're going to invade countries? And, I, you know, my mind was spinning. And I put that aside. It was like a nugget that you hold on to. This country was taken over by a group of people with a policy coup. Wolfowitz and Cheney and Rumsfeld, and you could name a half dozen other collaborators from the Project for a New American Century. They wanted us to destabilize the Middle East, turn it upside down, make it under our control. It went back to those comments in 1991. Now, did anybody ever tell you that? Was there a national dialogue on this? Did senators and congressmen stand up and denounce this plan? Was there a full-fledged American debate on it? Absolutely not. And there still isn't.
He's right.
And that's why we're...
And that's why right now, today, we are a police state. There is the top commander of NATO. There is a four-star general who had private conversations, who saw a secret memo planning everything we have done since. Do you think we said Libya had no threat to the United States and was not engaged in all the worse that it was? It was no different than many others, but it was a target. You heard him mention Libya. You heard him mention Syria. You heard him mention Somalia. You heard him mention Iran. So you think beating the drums for war, they were so successful getting the American public behind them the last time, do you think they'll be any less successful this time? They'll be just as successful this time. There'll be the same people on television, Geraldo getting on his little war outfit and running over there so he can qualify for another award. And you'll have Bill O'Reilly support our troops. If you're against the war there, you're against America. You'll have Rush Limbaugh and everyone else saying, you know, we've got to be patriotic, and if you're against this, you're unpatriotic. And you think, hold on a second, this is deja vu. We've been there before. We were there in Vietnam with a false flag operation, off the Tonkin, a ship being struck by Viet Cong. That didn't happen. We didn't have weapons of mass destruction. All lies. And he's giving us an insight. They were planning everything in 1991. Put that in your brain when it comes to understanding 9/11. Then it was have invasion of Iraq was re-upped after 9/11. So now we see the truth. How does that align with your ideology? Your turn. Speak back. Share your points of view. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take your calls on America becoming a police state, having people in power behind the scenes, manipulating everything, getting major policy think tanks and foundations to fund the big next militarization program at universities. Because if you can get this information to the minds of students to let them know that we are under threat, under attack, that we must do preemptive strikes, we must control the outcome, then you have a whole group of people who believe that what you're doing is okay. I mean, just imagine yourself being a police officer out in Oakland or LA, and you're in full combat gear. You're armed, you're locked and loaded, you got your pepper spray, you got your gun, baton, you got a shield, and there are a bunch of you. Twice as many of you as there are protesters. And as you approach the protesters, you see they're unarmed, they're young students, They're locked in arms, they're peaceful, and they're engaged in their legitimate constitutional right of free speech and right of assembly to address grievances against the government. Why would you pepper spray? Why would you beat them? Why would you taser them? Why would you do anything except allow them to be who they are? You are not at risk. You're not at threat. What kind of mindset then has been given to people to militarize them so that they see the person, the student sitting there, they see that person as an Al-Qaeda, as someone who's been strapped with bombs, because that's exactly how they're going to be treated. What has gone on? And it's going on everywhere in the United States. We are a police state. Back in a moment. Start with health and nutrition information, but because of our guest needing to be at the top of the show, we reversed the order. So now we have time for your calls going into the studio, the latest on health and nutrition information, which we'll be taking. Let me just give a little bit of health and nutrition, and then we'll take your calls. A lot of you know the importance of raw food because you've seen that when you went on a raw food diet, you're eyes cleared up, your mucus stopped, your skin improved, body elimination improved, your energy increased. And there's good reason for that, because raw foods are loaded with enzymes and phytonutrient and chlorophyll. Here's something new. Raw foods increase mental performance. And let's see what a UCLA professor of neurosurgery and physiology of science says. Says food is like a pharmacological compound that affects the brain. And then went into some research about the more of the raw foods that you consume, especially fruits and vegetables, the better it is for the brain. Black raspberries, purslane, hemp seed, pecans, hazelnuts, chia seeds, wonderful plant foods that help you give your brain the nutrients it needs. By the way, one in five of U.S. adults are on behavioral medications. I consider that a travesty. There is no need for that. That's once again lining up and accepting that what you claim is a mental disorder can only be approached as diagnosing it as such and then medicating you. There's no relief from that. So I'm going to be doing a special two-hour program on the drugging of Americans, where we'll have behavioralists, neuroscientists, and others on to show we are not a nation that's crazy. We do not have brain chemical imbalances, as we're told we shouldn't be on these meds. That'll be an upcoming program. Tomorrow, you won't want to miss tomorrow. The most comprehensive investigation of the contamination of every single vaccine ever made, including all the ones you're getting today. And we have just finished this early this morning. So once you hear this, and it'll be posted on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, you will just be shocked. But then earlier today came this, quote, all vaccines are contaminated, every last one of them. And this is from S. Edmondson for Salem News. Quote, the chief, if not the sole cause of the monstrous increase in cancer has been vaccination, says Dr. Robert Bell, Vice President, International Society for Cancer Research at the British Cancer Hospital. Then Dateline, Washington, D.C. Have you been rushing out to get your yearly flu vaccine or diligently taking your children for the 40 or more mandated childhood vaccines? there's really a shame because you have unwittingly been trading a run-of-the-mill flu or just the measles for loading up your body or your child's bodies with cancer and other deadly viruses, a destructive bacteria, a chemical selected to damage fertility, and synthetic DNA that threatens to damage your own DNA, the biologic road to your existence. Who is saying the vaccines are contaminated? None other than now deceased head of vaccines at Merck, Dr. Maurice Hillerman, who on camera admitted that Merck hepatitis B vaccine was contaminated with a virus called and he went on to say that that Merck's vaccines are contaminated with cancer and other viruses. The U.S. government has conceded the Hep B vaccine causes lupus. The vaccine is mandated for every infant in the United States from day of birth. It also is associated with multiple sclerosis. The vaccine is mandated for every infant. And so it anyhow goes on to talk about this. Well, that's one article. We'll be doing a very comprehensive program tomorrow on this very subject. Let us go into studio right now and say hello to Jason and Elizabeth. Hi, Jason.
Hi, good afternoon, Gary. I just I'm sorry to cut you off. I just wanted to talk about the Progressive Commentary Hour and say how great it is and how we have a new little link up on the website that you can go on and click right away and get all your investigative reports from there and link right away to all the breaking news. That, remember, is a show that you created, and it was Google Now. Over 8.5 million people search. That is absolutely impressive. And then besides that, now with Progressive Radio, we're up to almost 300 million searches as of this morning. This is an absolute milestone.
Over 300 million. I was doing my overnight show on KPFK, and I Googled it, and it was 322 million this morning at 3 o'clock.
That's without a doubt a milestone. And just to say, we will not be airing on some stations during the pledge drives in the coming week on Pacifica and stuff, so we wanted to know that was just unfortunate, not due to us, but due to a failure with promise to keep our listeners' donations, getting them the stuff they need. So if you do want to listen to Gary, he will be on every day. You just have to go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or PRN.FM, and Gary will be on every day during the pledge drive.
Okay, thank you. Elizabeth, back to you.
Yes, hello, Gary. We have two emails. They're very similar in nature. They're quite short, so I'd just like to read them both, if that's okay.
Sure.
The first one's from Sharon from Ontario. These are both related to yesterday. She says she's a new listener over the last 4 months. After her friend sent her a link to the Progressive Commentary Hour, she's been listening to that every week for the last 4 months. She says she finds it the most informed, progressive, insightful hour in radio. Today she yesterday was the first time she listened to your noon show and was impressed that you cover so many important topics. She liked what you had to say about the author and his book about positive thinking. She realized that she'd made the same mistake. She was also into the Touch Your Spirit and Make Yourself Happy, she says, books and videos. She too joined a group. She paid about $6,000 for a week in Sedona for classes with meditation, and they cheer and applaud each other. But when she came home in the weeks later, she realized that nothing had really changed. So she really connected with what you had to say yesterday, and it made her feel good, and she'd love to know that she realized, and she'd love it if you would explore this even more, please. And also, Joyce from Salt Lake City in Utah says she was intrigued by your comments on yesterday's show, and after thinking about it for quite a while, she realized finally that you're absolutely correct. Nothing causes us to change. She asks, please, would you explain this in more depth, please?
Okay. I will be happy to. Real quick, let's just say hello to Pam from New Jersey. I want to get someone to talk about their views on America becoming a police state. Pam, you're on the air.
Hi, Gary. Yes, I am against, and I'm going to call. I do need the New Jersey senator's phone number. I got the New York. Can we also call New York?
Yes, you can.
If I'm from New Jersey?
Yeah.
Okay, I will. And yesterday I got the New York numbers. And definitely against the military being able to hold us in prison indefinitely without trial. That's really bad. And I'm also against our military going to war and killing people in other countries because of terrorism. You don't kill everybody in the other country for a few terrorists I call that murder. I know a lot of people like to say war isn't murder, but I call it murder, killing innocent people in other countries.
Okay, Pam, and thank you. I appreciate your input. Let me address this. Americans are stressed out, and we're frequently confused, more than any other generation. And so what has filled that void to try to help us or to exploit us is the feel-good psychology. About every 2 years, a new big, best, most important, deep, secret, wonderful, touchy-feely concept evolves. Generally, it's a book or a video or both. And with some rather charismatic person coming on the scene, explaining if we just do what they're suggesting, our life will change. And initially, there are all kinds of anecdotal support stories. And then you start seeing the seminars all over the place. In fact, I was actually offered to go and lecture at one in Bali. A nice fat check, $25,000, first class airfare. For going in and out and lecturing to 75 couples who were there to get that secret. And I said, no, I won't participate in this. Why? And the current one is Flourish, a visionary new understanding of happiness and well-being from Martin Seligman. It's all about positive psychology, and he is the founder of positive psychology. And he has every right to suggest this, and I have every right to challenge it. Why? Because look at Oprah Winfrey. She was popular for several reasons, not the least of which a lot of people who were not happy with their lives and were frustrated and felt helpless or disempowered would listen to her, and she would have a whole stream of people on in different fields giving you insights and information that was supposed to allow you to break free of the conditioning self and become this happy, wonderful person. The trouble is it just doesn't work, least of all on her. And yet, after making $1 billion and being one of the most recognized people in the world and literally idolized, she couldn't find her own inner peace and her own inner happiness except through how the public, through adulation and attention, but that is not uncommon. My contention is that we should do two things simultaneously. First, we should understand that what we think and what we do come from our conditioned self. And if we are honest about it and are willing to take a deeper and frequently more painful trip, that we realize our social networks are only a sanctuary and are not a place to hang out, because as long as I'm talking with other people about what's wrong with them and they're hearing my story about myself, then I'm feeling better about myself. But how are you going to feel when you're out there in the world on your own? What are you going to do? You run back to it? Too many times we live with illusions of what should be happiness and what should create security for us, and they don't. We were told that if we only had the right partner and the right house, the right children, the right job, the right income, we would feel happy and we would be content. The trouble is, more often than not, that's not the case. And we have detached from our authentic self and embraced our insecure self. And that's because we have two types of conditioning. We have the early life experiences, which can start when we're in the womb, with the anxiety, the fights, the frustration, the anger that comes through the vibrations into the developing fetus. This is not myth. This is scientific reality. And then how we're treated before we can intellectually express ourselves and understand what someone else is doing does not necessarily mean that we're a bad person or we've done something wrong. But all that is encoded, and that becomes the hardwired initial unconscious tapes, and that creates the conflict within our psyche. And then over and over again, we replay them emotionally. We act out, almost out of control. We no longer respect boundaries. We can't stop ourselves, and hence our compulsive behavior. And look at most people's compulsive behavior. It is what undoes them. The compulsive eating leads to diabetes, heart attack, stroke, and all forms of problems. Compulsive lying, compulsive cheating, compulsive denying, compulsive blaming, whining, complaining, compulsive neediness, these are all coming more often than not from that unconscious conditioned mind. On top of that, you have another one. You have the person who is fully aware of conflicts in their life, those times when they were dismissed and they suffered and they were maybe rebelled and they were stifled, they spoke out and they were smacked down, they were deprived, they were refused, they were feeling helpless, and they clearly remember how that felt. So that is the conscious negative conditioning. Now against those two, you have the authentic spiritual energy, unpolluted, undiluted, fully capable of forgiveness, joy, happiness, peace, love, all that we need in life for our security. The trouble is, that is only about 5% of where we put our energy each day. Now, it is important if we can think of positive thoughts. What do we want the outcome to be for our health, for our relationships, for the life we're living, for the job we want? And that's where you should put your energy. That is where that, but that requires discipline. It requires a spiritual discipline. Are you going to be able to do this every day? Are you going to be able to wake up every day and think a positive thought and then put yourself into an action that creates, are you going to eat positively? Are you going to share conversations that are positive? Because that discipline creates new tapes, new tapes, new tapes, and then what you're doing mindfully in the moment sets you up for having a shift in how your energy is going to be manifested. I know people that the moment they're challenged with something to do in life that would benefit them, they get physically ill. And they can't make the connection that the challenge to do something that they've never done before is what's causing the illness, because the conditioned self is saying, I can't do this, I'll fail, I'll be judged, I'll be criticized, I don't want to face this, I don't want myself to be that vulnerable. And you go into this regressive state. And how do you defend yourself when you're a kid? You get sick. And what happens when you're sick? Well, you get attention, you get kisses, you get hugs, and you're not expected to do anything. And as a result, in those moments when we feel most vulnerable, and then the unconscious tapes and the subconscious tapes click on, we regress. So our candida doesn't necessarily come because we've eaten mushrooms or vinegar or sugar. It can just as easily come when we cannot find the joy in life, no matter how much we've succeeded or no matter how many people we've impressed by our dress, our looks, and our established a high level of perfection. But are you happy? Well, I didn't count happiness into what I had to do. Oh, yeah. Start by focusing on happiness, and then everything else evolves from that. If you start on doing a good job or being obedient or living the life you were meant to live, but happiness is not a part of it, then watch the illnesses follow. Watch the compulsive behavior follow. Watch your going out of your way to sublimate what is missing in your life so that you can have that at least feedback loop. But the feedback loop from other people is assuming that you're doing what they need you to do for you to be accepted. So instead, you put on the smiley face, you become robotic in the emotions. You also don't come into grips with the unconscious conflict in your psyche, the compulsive behavior, the crossing of boundaries, the thinking the negative thoughts, the acting out in a childlike way. When you decide to dismiss, digress, or avoid your inner conflict, the dark side of your nature, then you're limited by it. All the good deeds, all the loving nature, all the things you could be if you lived a more authentic life, are undermined by what you did from the negative, conditioned, compulsive side. And that's hard for us to understand, because that means there's duality. There's a good self, you bet. Wonderful, joyful, happy, pleasurable, creative, giving, nurturing, caring. And then there's the dark self. Greedy, selfish, contemptible, sarcastic, vengeful, violent. Including emotional violence. Well, how do you reconcile having both of these energies in the same person? Because of, as I explained, that which is conditioned from early life, and then all the incidences we couldn't control, that's the dark side. Now, when they come along with this feel-good psychology, if it does not address how you can resolve by confronting, understanding, and limiting your negative side to have any power in what you do each day, then you only have that feel-good moment. It only serves us and can serve us well to think positive and happy thoughts when we are also mindful of our conditioned self and do not allow that to supersede anything else. When you do that, then the positive psychology can be sustaining. Otherwise, we are living with this happy face illusion. If you deny the corruption of self, the greed of self, the stupidity of self, then you're disguising a very, very critical part of an egocentric mentality. You have to deal with the dark side if you want to be living in the light side. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening.
The Gary Nall Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matthew Bogart. All shows are archived by Kyle Pollard. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Jason Tabenfeld. And with it.